Hey everyone, I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color, a Baltimore podcast. My guest today is Aisha Pugh, co-owner and co-operator of Dovecote Cafe, a cozy new coffee shop in Reservoir Hill. The shop sells coffee, of course, as well as pastries and pies. Is that part true? Do you guys sell pastries and pies?
We do sell pastries and pies,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Liar!
We sell pastries and pies. The cafe story is an interesting one, and I wanted Aisha to tell it in her own words. We'll also talk about the hardships of entrepreneurship, her upbringing, and why her and her partner are so adamant about young folks owning homes. Aisha, welcome to Local Color.
Thank you, Jason.
How you doing today?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. I've never been behind a microphone like this.
Oh, well, don't get too excited. I'm not big time yet.
I don't believe it. Okay. You seem pretty big timey to me, taking pictures, selfies right now.
Okay. So first things first, what's a Dovecote?
That is first things first. So what's in a name? A Dovecote as a noun is a medieval birdhouse. So typically, you'll find them in England, and it's a birdhouse structure that people used for pigeons and doves, like housing and homing pigeons. But so that was great. And our front windows, if you've been to the cafe, our front windows resemble a birdhouse. So we were looking for something that was synonymous to a birdhouse. But the secret meaning of a Dovecote that not a lot of people know is that it also means where a harmonious group comes to settle. And since we are a cafe that is for the neighborhood and of the community, this idea and notion and wanting to invoke a sense of nesting was really important to us. And the fact that the name had both visual aesthetics to the birdhouse front as well as an invocation of settling worked really well.
What's your story? I know part of your story, but in your own words, tell me how you got here.
I drove.
That's really clever.
Thanks. That was funny, right? So, okay. So our story is, I guess I'll tell the long story and you edit it down as you see fit, but originally,
yeah, start from the beginning.
Okay, so back in the 80s, baby.
What time were you born?
11:52, let my mother tell it, so I'm pretty sure she knows.
Okay.
So, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, and I left Brooklyn to go to school. I went to school in Connecticut, and like most people who go to school, leave college and you leave an urban neighborhood and you leave poverty, the goal is to get out. It's not to go back to Brooklyn. That wouldn't have been my mom's definition of success. And as she invested in my education, her goal was not for me to come home. Her goal was for me to go. And I went. And so after Connecticut, after I graduated from undergrad, I moved to Oakland, California, and went there for grad school. I went to UC Berkeley for grad school.
Where'd you go for undergrad?
I went to Wesleyan University. So there's a little bit misnomer that I went to CTNY. I don't know what that is, but I didn't go there. I actually went to Wesleyan, which is in Connecticut. And when I graduated, I went to grad school at UC Berkeley. And in Oakland, I met my partner, my life partner, and thought I would be there just for grad school. And then 7 years passed, 8 years, 10 years, a decade, and a dozen. And we were like, okay, it's time. Always wanted to get back to the East Coast and thought, okay, now's a great time to go back to New York. And Brooklyn is completely different. And it's overly wrought with gentrification. It doesn't feel like home anymore. I have a visceral, and I mean all the negative connotations that come with that word, visceral reaction every time I go back there, because it was a community that was once just on its grind. It was like a struggle community, but with love, where people were scratching their way to their existence. But there was soul to that community, soul to the neighborhoods of Brooklyn, and that has since been it's lost. And then Oakland is experiencing the same type of gentrification with a different angle, where Brooklyn has a lot of like beer gardens and
artisanal toast shops.
Exactly, the artisanal everything. I didn't even know you could apply that word to like nail polish or like nail salons or just everything is that's the perfect a perfect way to define. And that's so Oakland's different because the tech market has pushed everyone from Palo Alto and from San Francisco into Oakland. And so what also used to feel like a gritty city with spirit and hustle has now become like a virtual wasteland to us. And so we knew we needed to get out, and now is the time. And we came out to Baltimore to visit my uncle. We were actually in D.C. to visit President Obama, but and then we came out to Baltimore, since it's so close, to visit my uncle. And we loved it. It felt like home. It felt like Brooklyn of the 80s. My partner was born in D.C., and we all know what has happened to D.C., and so this felt like the cities of our childhood, and we wanted to be here. And so we went back to California, sold everything we owned, and literally drove across country with our house on our back, and here we are.
Wow. It was definitely one of those spur of the moment, like, we love it, we're going, end of story.
Yes. That's exactly what it was. When we walked down the block that we now live on, we were like, hallelujah, it still exists, you know? Where you think, you know, just based on our own past, you think all these cities are now being co-opted, and to realize that there's still a city out there that feels like home, feels like our youth, feels like it hasn't been overly saturated by corporations and logos and Disneyland, was super important, and we knew this is where we needed to be. So unfortunately, it didn't happen spontaneously. It wasn't like, we out this busy, and then all of a sudden we're here. It took us a couple, almost 9 to 10 months to get here. But now that we're here, we're not leaving.
And now, how long have you all been in Baltimore for?
3.5 months.
3.5 months? Yeah, I thought you were going to say like a couple of years or something. Just 3.5 months?
3.5 months. We just passed our first trimester.
So it's December now, so y'all came like around, I guess, August, September or so?
Yes, we pulled in to the hotel that we ended up living in for a month. We pulled in August 29th.
So you guys haven't even experienced a Baltimore summer yet. Have you ever had a snowball before?
A snowball, like the icy?
Okay. There's a difference between icy, like a snow cone and a snowball.
Well, based on your eyeball roll, yes, I'm assuming, yes, so. For, yes, those of you who can't see it, I just got mean mugged.
Snow cones are, like a snowball, basically, it's just a styrofoam cup. It's shaved ice. And of course, the flavoring is like.
Is it a quarter water with ice on it? Do you know what a quarter water is?
No.
Mm-hmm. See, now I'm going to side-eye you.
That's perfectly okay.
See, a quart of water is just a colored water that they put in like a little jug of plastic, and it's just flavoring. It's like not even Kool-Aid. It's
like one of them little huggy things?
Exactly.
Oh,
but
no.
It's like the low-bar Kool-Aid. So I think that's what a snowball sounds like to me.
No. It's okay. But it's,
sorry.
It's fine. It's,
I was trying to have a reference.
It's shaved ice. It's, Piragua?
Nope.
Oh, my God.
Judgment.
Okay. It's okay. I'm not judging you. It's just...
You kind of are.
Okay, fine. I am. All I'm saying is that when it gets warm out, just go to the nearest... Because people sell them all, and y'all live in Reservoir Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely go down to North Avenue in the spring or summertime. Just go get egg custard, because that's the flavor that everybody gets. There's egg custard, there's blueberry, strawberry, tons of flavors. But the best part about snowballs is that it's shaved ice with flavoring, but you can get marshmallow on top, you can get ice cream on the bottom. And you can ask Lauren this, you can ask my sister this. From the time I can remember until right now, I have always gotten the same thing, a blueberry snowball with ice cream on the bottom.
Mm.
That's how, like, obviously, if you go to a certain place, like, some places taste better than others, but once you get into that snowball groove, it's like, you don't stray.
You just stay true to blue.
It's true to blue. It locks
you
down. I've been locked down forever, but yes, when you have your first...
Well, let's make the deal, Jason. First day of summer,
okay,
I would like you to roll through the cafe,
okay,
with I think that egg custard and,
yeah,
ice cream sounds like the truth. So please bring that to the cafe. You can be our intro to the snowball.
Yes,
the snowball culture.
I'll do an episode about it.
Okay.
So, live from Dovecoat Cafe.
Yes, we will. Aisha, that's when we need to go on video. You know, we need to take it from mic, just like audio, to like
all right.
Stay tuned.
I'll stay true to that. Don't worry.
Perfect. And now, you know, you have an audience who hears that, your commitment to our snowball life.
Word is bond. I'll do it.
Word is bond.
I swear.
Okay. Okay.
So tell me more about Dovecoat Cafe. Did you guys moving to Baltimore inspire you to open a cafe, or is that something that you always wanted to do?
That's a great question. So I don't cook at all, but my mother is a social worker by trade, and she recently retired. And right after she retired, she went to culinary school because, you know, why sleep when you retire? Why actually, you know, relax? She went to culinary school because that's ultimately what she always wanted to do. She always wanted to be in hospitality. She wanted to cook. She wanted that to be her craft. But, you know, in a different generation, she was told, like, nope, that's not going to make any money. That is not going to feed your family. And so she had to make different decisions. So when she retired, she went to culinary school. And fast forward to when we came to visit my uncle, he used to own a pie shop in New York called Not By Bread Alone. And he also had not really retired, but just wasn't cooking anymore. He was working in the airport, doing different side hustles, but away from the kitchen. And both of them, from their early youth to, you know, to now, have always talked about doing something together in the culinary world. And I had spent my career kind of managing big box retail and big box operations, and just thought, wouldn't it be nice to be able to put kind of a career learned and an education invested in by my mother into use to make her dreams come true? And so that's where the cafe came. That's where the idea of kind of a culinary institution came from. And then a community cafe is just really aligned with our mission as a family and as a couple, to have something that is rooted in the community that we live in, and to create an institution that allows for a neighborhood space, so that we know our neighbors, we engage with our neighbors, and that they can know and engage with one another.
Describe for people listening what the cafe looks like. You told us about the outside. Tell us about the inside.
Oh, wow. Okay, so close your eyes.
They're closed.
Okay.
If I fall asleep, I apologize.
Wow, you won't fall asleep. So when you walk into the cafe, to the right is an 8-foot by 10-foot installation of a secret garden in bright colors, oranges, reds, yellows, with the hidden pumpkins and eggplants and butterflies. But it's a larger than life of color, and it looks like a painting. So the cafe manager has been telling people that I have personally painted it, as though I'm Picasso. But if someone commissions me to paint their house, the secret will be out. Yes, because it will look nothing like that. It's actually wallpaper, and it's framed in a gold metallic frame. In front of that secret garden are wood and metal fused tables, real rustic look, paired with clear acrylic chairs and metal benches. So that's one vignette of the cafe. If you're still standing at the door and you look to your left, there is a black and white wallpaper installation, which is a take on a classic French toile, contemporary French toile wallpaper, but it's done by Sheila Bridges, and she's a black interior designer based in Harlem, and she has been an interior designer for decades, and she uses the contemporary French wallpaper, and which has very white images in colonial dress, and she puts it up in the homes that she designs, and she was just tired of not having black images in graphic prints. And so what do we do when we're tired of something? We create our own, and that's exactly what she did. She created a wallpaper that is a twist that she calls Harlem Toile de Joie, and it has black images in colonial dress in this very traditional print, but the scenes are kids jumping double dutch, kids playing basketball in front of the arch that some people say look like the ones in front of Druid Hill Park, but because I'm from Brooklyn, to me they look like Prospect Park. People having a picnic. It's just really awesome. So that's black and white. And in front of that wallpaper installation, that's also framed in gold metallic. And in front of that, navy blue couches and curated metal tables by a young black metal worker who was transitioning from doing mostly fire escapes and banisters. We begged and begged and begged for him to do tables for our cafe. So they're handcrafted small batch art or small batch craft for the cafe, and also acrylic chairs. So that's kind of the main dining room space. And in the little birdhouses are where our art install is. And right now we have Stephen Towns installed in one the left little nook, and he was just recently featured in Be More Art in their first edition. And in the right, we have Jonathan Brickus, and he started off as a street artist. He was a graffiti artist, and now he's playing his hand and painting and doing a phenomenal job. So those are the two vignettes, and the furniture in there is very minimalist, modernist, so that we don't kind of compete with the beautiful art that's there.
Gotcha. Now, when you go in the Dove Coat Cafe, you can just as easily buy coffee, sit down, and be about you. I just noticed that you did not put a tea bag in that. You're just drinking hot water.
Hot water.
Is it like, why? Like,
why no tea bag?
Yeah.
Well, now I'm being put on blast. Well,
no, I'm just curious. It's very interesting.
Because I didn't want a flavor, but my throat was kind of hurting. So I wanted water, but I didn't want it to be cold because I'm also kind of cold.
Yeah.
And then I've been drinking coffee. No, I didn't want tea. I'm not really a tea drinker. I'm like a coffee drinker.
This is why they opened Dove Coat Cafe.
Yeah, one of the reasons to feed my habit, right? It's terrible. I have to keep telling the staff we cannot get high on our own supply.
That's right.
We need to have some boundaries.
You'd be the most enterprising addict, though. It's like, I had to feed my addiction, so I started a business.
Sure did. Well, that's why we put peach upside down cake on the menu, because my mom used to only make it for Cole for her birthday or like when she cried, which was really sad. Cole is my partner, and so we opened the cafe so that my mom would have to make peach upside down cake every day, and Cole has a slice every day.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so she's feeling good about that.
That's good. So you can go get coffee there, but you guys have a little system for your customers to get to know them called Javatone. Can you explain what Javatone is?
Sure. So actually, you have to say Javatone. Like
Javatone.
Java. Tone.
Tone.
Javatone. Yeah.
Okay.
So it has a little bit of a little, its own, cadence to it. So Javatone is kind of our Dove Coat language. When you come into the cafe, we've been trained to order certain ways by other establishments like Tall, Grande, Frappo, whatever. So, that's not us. So Javatone describes the shade in which you take your coffee based on how much cream you put into it. So it starts, if you take no cream and you just take it black like I do, then your Javatone is inkwell. And then it gets progressively lighter, of course, as you add more cream to your coffee. And so the last one is Tiza, which means chalk in Spanish. And we are a full service coffee bar, because one of my beliefs is that the most intimate, or at least one of the most intimate things that you can know about a person is how they take their coffee. And we want to be able to engage with our customers and our neighbors and know how they take their coffee. So once you tell us what your Java tone is, then as you frequent the cafe and you come in, we can say, oh, you're an Inkwell and you take one sugar, or oh, you're a Tisa, and that way we have shared language around coffee, but also a level of intimacy around how you take it.
Right, that's like enhancing the customer experience, because right, they're not just somebody who, I mean, they are giving you their money, but it's like, instead of just snatching a couple dollars and sending them out the door, you are creating a camaraderie with them. So then when they're like, you know, I really want a coffee, where should I go? It's like, I could go this place, or I could go to Dove Coat, because I know when I go in there, they know exactly what I like.
Exactly. I was going to say, oh, that sounds good, we should have recorded that, but we did.
Gotcha. So can you tell me about some hidden hardships about entrepreneurship that the average person might not know? Because I feel like nowadays in the 21st century, it's all about, you know, hustling hard, doing what you need to do, kind of rejecting the notion that our parents passed down to us, kind of like, I mean, it's still go to school, get a job, blah, blah, blah. But instead of getting a job at, you know, the factory down the road that everybody works at, or working for some big company, more and more people are realizing, like, I don't want to work for anybody but myself. So tell me about, I guess, the entrepreneurial spirit, and something that someone who's not an entrepreneur, somebody who wants to start out, might not know.
I think that's a great question, because I left corporate America where I was making what would look on paper as a great salary. And I left because I felt like I was giving so much time to an institution and not enough time to my family, and not really feeding like my spirit in terms of what I wanted to be doing. And so I was like, oh, when I start my own business, I'm going to have time to see my partner. I'm going to start it with my mom, so I'll see my mom every day. I'll define my own hours. Please, that's not it at all, Jason. Because ultimately, your customer always will define your hours if you're doing it right. And I literally work, in corporate America, I worked maybe 60 hours a week. When it's your business, every waking hour is about your business. There is no shut off time. And you might see your loved ones, but they're coworkers, you know, like you're working with them. And now that you have less like turn off time, you actually spend less different kind of quality time. Like the quality time is that we're together in this adventure together, and like we're on the same hustle and grind together. But going to see a movie, watching TV, cuddling, please. I don't think I've touched my partner since we got here. Like we haven't had any time to like, we'll hug when I leave. So, we'll give each other a high five. But like have time to like go to dinner with my mom and not talk about work and just check in on how she's doing. Like the time intensity of the entrepreneurial game is something that I don't think anybody knows for sure until they're out there doing it.
Gotcha. Now you described some of them. What on like the business side, what's a hardship that you encountered that you really didn't foresee coming? Because I think when you start something, when you start any type of endeavor, you have an idea, you have like a very like perfect idea of what it's going to be, and then like 3 weeks later you're just like, how did I get here?
Exactly. Right, you're down a rabbit hole looking out like, oh gosh. Well, I think that's just it. It's like we originally thought, okay, we'll get here August 29th, we had our contractor, we'll get our little permits, we had our spot, we'll open October 1st. Great, we were ready to go. October 1st came and went, November 1st came and went, And so I think just what you put in your business plan, you have to know it's a flexible document. And if you're committed to any one thing and not open to the flexibility of reality, you can be derailed into an emotional tailspin real fast, because like you just said, it's not going to look the way you thought it was going to look. And unless you have mental agility to like, okay, we were going down that road and that's a roadblock, so you could either stand there looking at the roadblock and 15 minutes, 15 days, 15 years later still be standing there, or you can say, okay, here's what we're going to do, here's how the adjustments that we're going to make, and here's the new road we're going to take. But if you're not prepared for that, you can get lost real quickly. And that was a good lesson learned.
Yeah. Yeah, I think even so far with me and the podcast and kind of just when I graduated from school in general, and incidentally, when you mentioned that you went to Wesleyan, I didn't go there. Because I went to school in Connecticut for a year and a half, but I had to transfer because I majored in partying, and that's not good.
Oh, where'd you go?
University of Hartford.
Oh, yeah.
And it was...
You majored in partying?
I mean, I had an actual major, but I was just more concerned about partying.
So that was like a heavy minor.
Yeah. That's a perfect way to put it. What was I going to say? Oh, when you're in school, you think that stuff in life, like getting a job and becoming successful, comes way quicker than it really does. Like, you don't really know what it means to grind until you are...
Until your feet hurt.
Yes. And you're like, oh, I forgot to pay my rent again, and I can't buy all these groceries because I got to pay my light bill, and I know my shoes got holes in them, but I mean, like the soles are still intact, so I'm just going to have to rock with these shoes for a little bit.
Put on those two pair of socks.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And the heat is off, so it's like, I can't do anything until I get paid again. It's like, every time you get paid, that money's already spoken for. Every time you have a plan, like you said, if you don't have that mental agility or you're not flexible enough, you just get lost in the sauce. You're just like, ugh, I had so many plans and dreams, and now it's not working out the way I thought it would. But I think, like you said, it's a good lesson, because then you realize, like, nothing is stable in human affairs, so you just gotta roll with the punches and keep grinding, because nobody who's ever wanted to be successful has ever failed. It's just like, how bad do you want it? You know what I mean? What's, like, one piece of advice you would want to give to somebody, especially a person of color? Because I also think that what holds a lot of us back, and I'm not talking about black people, I just mean like blacks, Asians, Latinos, and even obviously some white people, is like they want to do something that is not arbitrarily like for them, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if a black person wanted to be a professional skier, it's like black people don't do that.
Right. But
like,
once we break into skiing, right, we're gonna change the game.
Right, exactly. So right. What's one piece of advice you could give to really anybody that wants to build their own future?
I think it would be to have a support system, because a lot of entrepreneurs who get out there and do it are super driven, because you have a lot of couch entrepreneurs too who are like, yeah, I'm about to start that business, and it never gets beyond the couch. But if you're out there and you're really about the hustle and you're already driven and moving forward, a lot of times that happens in a silo and you're like, I'm going to just go. I'm going to grind. I'm going to make it happen. And without a support system, you are only as good as the person who's going to take care of you when you're sick. So if you're out of commission and there's no one to have your back, your whole dream will crumble. And so my advice would be that before you get out there and put out your flag or put out your sign, is to make sure you have a crew who has your back, so that you have the support, you have the cheerleading, you have the love, and you have someone who can step in and hold you down in the event that you need it.
Yeah, I think that also even includes someone to tell you, like, you're doing too much, you gotta chill.
All right, take a nap.
Yeah, just do something. All right, that's good. So why are you and Cole so crazy about home ownership? I mean, I get it, that home ownership, it's a good thing to own something, but you guys are like... You guys were pitching me hard about coming to that thing. Was it like January?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Like, why are you guys? Why is that so? Why are you guys so passionate about that?
So listen, I know you only have this one mic, but I would be remiss to try to speak on this on my own. I feel like Cole should jump on the one and twos right now.
Sure.
And give you the answer to that.
Absolutely. Okay.
So we're gonna play a little musical chairs for cheers.
Okay.
What is it about home ownership that just speaks to you?
Such a great question. We are very, very passionate about getting young people of color to buy, build, and invest collectively in the neighborhoods that we grew up in and hoods really around the country. I think that we're seeing an unprecedented return to the central cities by folks who have resources and means, and it's gentrifying and changing neighborhoods at a pace that really I don't think anybody would have believed 15, 20 years ago in a lot of the neighborhoods that we grew up in. And so there's two reasons we're super passionate about it. One is that when we are together as communities of color, we actually have more political, economic, and social power than we are when we are dispersed, that we don't benefit from the resources that traditionally happen when you live out in the suburbs in a neighborhood where maybe you're one of, you know, a handful of families in your neighborhood, as opposed to being in a neighborhood in a block. And that's so critical in terms of like having access to schools and to be able to fight for them. And unfortunately, right after segregation happened, a lot of particularly black folks who had resources and means left the central cities and they went to the suburbs because for the first time they weren't being segregated and discriminated against and they had the opportunity to do that. But what ended up
was, after like desegregation?
Right, after segregation was over and desegregation began. Folks were able for the first time to move into neighborhoods that previously they had been banned from. And what happened was you basically had an entire stretch of our community that had resources and tools and support abandon the central cities. And so as a result, they've been vulnerable to so many challenges over the last two decades. So for us, it's about actually bringing our communities back together, that those of us who are young, who are innovators, who are willing to open cafes and build, you know, not only public spaces around food, but around technology and art, and to make things beautiful, that it's on us to come back to the central cities and to invest collectively together. And the other piece is that the seed for most people of color in terms of all of the dreams that we want is around having access to resources and networks and wealth. And if we're really going to change that, then it requires that we actually be invested. Aisha and I, we bought our first places when we first met. And we worked on them ourselves. We put a lot of elbow grease into them, but we were able to actually transform those houses. And as a result, when we sold those houses, we were able to use the resources from that to open the cafe, to move across country, to invest in so many other projects, to buy art and support young artists. And if more young people of color were able to own their own homes, not only would we not be able to be displaced because we would be building community together, but we would also be creating the kind of long-term wealth that's going to mean our kids can go to college. It's going to mean they're going to be able to open businesses and buy their own homes. And that is how you ultimately transform the direction of our entire generation.
Are you sure you don't want to like be a public speaker as a profession? That was amazing.
No, I'm good. Thank you. But this is very awesome. I'm going to scoot out of the way so Aisha can get back up in here.
No problem. what's next for Dovecote Cafe? What are you guys working on now?
We're going to take over the world.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
Like a Pinky and the Brain style, but actually...
But that's actually going to happen.
Be successful at it, yes.
Can I be like your director of communications?
Oh, yeah, the world takeover?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. All right, I'll have to learn more about, propaganda and such, but I'll do a good job.
I know you would. This is already a great job. Well, you know, we joke, but that kind of is the next step, is just to bring a model of community in terms of the space that we've been able to create with Dovecote, to bring our vision of community with what Cole does with Brioxi and home ownership and the centralization of community and black community and black ownership, that we want to take our cities back, that we want to gentrification the best part about it is that they bring so many institutions that we deserved to have in the first place. It's great to have a cafe and a local fish market and a florist. We deserve that in Black communities as well. So when we say home ownership and the centralization of neighborhoods, that's what we want it to look like. We want small businesses back. We want neighborhoods back. And we want that around the nation, because we've seen it. We've seen it go sideways in the neighborhoods that we grew up in, and we want to be the counteract to that.
Gotcha. You guys want to
give shout outs? Shout out to my mom, Mama G. If you don't joke,
no, that's fine. Anything else you want to mention that we haven't gone over?
No, that was
awesome. I think you covered everything, Jason. Thank you again so much.
Yeah, sure.
We could talk for days. Give us a microphone.
Aisha and Cole, I want to thank you guys for sitting down with me today. If you like coffee or you just want to stop in and say hi, Dovecoat Cafe is located at 2501 Madison Avenue, a couple blocks south of Druid Lake Park. Follow Local Color on Instagram at LocalColorABP. I'll also be moving the podcast from my SoundCloud to my new website. Bookmark localcolorpod.tk and check back often for updates. I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color. You guys did a fantastic job.
Yay, Jason. Awesome. That was so great.